1992's A Few Good Men, rated R. It's a courtroom drama, stars Tom Cruise, Jack Nicholson, and Demi Moore. Rob Reiner's direction and Aaron Sorkin's first screenplay, which legend holds was jotted onto cocktail napkins. When an unpopular Marine winds up dead after being hazed by two other soldiers, Navy lawyer Daniel Caffey, like that name, that's Tom Cruise, is tasked with defending the presumed murderers. But as Caffey probes further under the urging of Joanne Galloway, that's Demi Moore, he finds they may have been simply following orders. And that's this week's film on Rocket Pop Reviews.
Rocket.
Welcome to Rocket Pop Reviews, giving Christian families a reliable source for reviews of movies, shows, books, and podcasts.
Every four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle functions.
We're serious about the fun of entertainment.
Nice to be in
orbit. Roger, zero-G, and I feel fine.
And now your hosts, Steve Manuel and Jeff Davenport.
Jeff, let's talk about A Few Good Men. This was a wildly popular movie made a very long time ago now, 1992. And let's talk about the craft of this movie.
This movie was made in 92, but cable has made this movie nonstop.
It's still in the culture. The interesting thing is it was made in 92. It didn't come out onto DVD or streaming until well into the 2000s. So it laid low for like 10 or 15 years, and then it popped up. And I suppose because of its popularity, it is still ubiquitous, as you say. Now, a couple of observations of mine. One is that this film is sumptuous to look at. Forgive me. It is set in the fall. It's a Rob Reiner film. So to me, as old as I am, it's reminiscent of 1989's When Harry Met Sally, which is also shot in the fall. I'm sorry for the 36-year-old reference there, but it's just a pretty film, and I like that. They had to do that, by the way. This is one of those films where you've got to make sure that there's something for a viewer to enjoy, because this is a adaptation of a Broadway play. So most of the scenes are people sitting around talking about the plot. So you want it to look good, at least. And I personally enjoy that a lot. I've got to throw in that the opening credits were trying to set up that this is a very regimented military kind of world. And so the opening credits is an engaging shot of a drill team, a military drill team performed by, do you know who, Jeff?
I have a feeling I know. It's not the Baylor Bears.
It's the Texas A&M freshman drill team, so wow. That's kind of a delight for me. I love, Jeff, an unspooling political investigation movie. I'm just a sucker for it. I love any movie where we're walked deeper and into an investigation or intrigue where the plot thickens and things are not what they seem. So I'm in. So if this is also your cup of tea, we're going to say some things that are some concerns about A Few Good Men. But I'd also like to recommend another few films that fit into that genre. 12 Angry Men is a classic. The Verdict is very strong. And The Rainmaker is a John Grisham story that was successfully turned into a movie that I think is a delight. So I throw those things out. You have any comment on the genre?
It is one of these, it's an onion movie where you're peeling back the onion to try to figure out what's going on. And the trick on writing these, Rob Reiner as the director, that's not much. He's functional because this isn't really a cinematic movie. Like you said, this is more of a writing movie and an acting movie.
Yes.
Sort of a feeling what he did was mostly working with the actors, blocking that kind of thing, like a stage play. Really, this is about the script. And Aaron Sorkin is a famous writer, maybe the most famous screenwriter in Hollywood at this point. He wrote all sorts of movies, including the Facebook movie, The Social Network. He's probably most famous for a number of TV series, including The West Wing. And so his stuff is very dialogue-y. And Yes. The reason this script works is because, and this is a real trick with the Onion type of movies, is that you want the main characters to be ahead of you, the viewer, but not too far ahead. And if they ever far fall behind and you're like, I know where this is going. You're either fast forwarding or you're shutting off. If they're too far ahead, you're like, wait, but who are those? I'm not piecing this together. It's like, it has to just function like this, where you're right behind there. Oh yeah. And maybe once in a while you go, oh, I thought it was, but not too much. It's a very delicate balance in this movie. The script strikes that balance really well.
And when they have an assistant or somebody that's coming alongside and they have to explain, here's why you do that, then we're going like, yes, yes, I'm with you. I follow. It's great.
That character is really important in so many movies. It's the character that's asking the questions that we, the audience, would be asking. So we're not steeped in marine law. We're not steeped in all of this stuff. So there's got to be somebody who's not a total moron walking. It's not like I brought my cousin Bill along for the adventure. It's someone who's new to the process and they're asking these questions and the audience is thinking without thinking it, I'm glad he asked that question because I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's helping us understand the rules of the story so that we can track along with the main characters. And again, this movie's great at that.
Right. So I mentioned this movie is 30 years old. The music in it stands out as being super dated. It just feels, it honestly feels more like 80s than 90s. It's 1992. And all of the background music just feels very cliche. Having said that, for people of a certain age, there's a nostalgia that comes from watching this movie, which is really fun. So Tom Cruise is constantly watching old baseball games on TV, and they queued it up so that you can hear the announcer mentioning Cal Ripken is up to bat. And you're sort of like, oh, good times. I remember college or whatever. Jeff, there are stars dripping off of every scene in this movie. There's probably the two most famous men in movie making at the time, Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson, are running the show here. You've also got Demi Moore, whose star was definitely rising at the time. She carried a couple of films on her own name. There's Kevin Pollak. There was Noah Wiley, Kevin Bacon, Kiefer Sutherland, Cuba Gooding Jr. There's a couple of guys that you recognize. I know that guy. That's a famous movie guy, but I don't know his name. Even Christopher Guest shows up in this movie, who I think of as a wacky comedy guy. And he has a part as like, I'm a Navy lieutenant. And I mean, there's people everywhere.
Jamie Farr, Doris Day, Daryl Strawberry. They're all in it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Tom Cruise, we've got to stop on Tom Cruise.
Okay.
Because for me, this movie, Tom Cruise drives me nuts. This is to some degree peak caricature Tom Cruise.
That's true.
He's over. It's as if, remember when Ben Stiller was on SNL and he would do a Tom Cruise impersonation?
Yes.
This feels like someone doing an impression of Tom Cruise.
Yes.
He's overly I'm focused on me, Playboy, and overly caring about this and overly, I don't care. It's Tom Cruise turned up. So it's like Tom Cruise squared. There's more Tom Cruise in this movie than ever was a Tom Cruise. I prefer him when he's a little understated in Rain Man. Gosh, even Top Gun comp Tom Cruise looks at this one and goes, back it off a little pal.
I always think of Collateral as being his best kind of understated actor move.
Yes, he can be great. To me, some of this comes to the Aaron Sorkin writing. I think Aaron Sorkin, who am I to criticize Aaron Sorkin? I think he overwrites sometimes. Uh-huh. Now, the sweet spot acting-wise in this movie is Jack Nicholson.
Before you get to Jack Nicholson, I want to tell you two moves of Tom Cruise that I noticed watching this movie, okay?
Yeah.
One is he's got to put off, as you said, the kind of careless, casual playboy thing.
Cavalier.
While Demi Moore's trying to make him pay attention here. This is serious. So he's constantly, you know, they've got him at the plate and he's hitting fungos on the softball field, and he's got to be chewing gum while she's trying to talk to him, and he's saying, I'll be there at 7. So like he's constantly doing this. Yeah. And he's got jaw forward, working that gum. And I remember thinking, watching that scene, like, bro, let's take two on that. Let's cut and let's run it back. The other one was when he is challenging people, as he does a couple of times in the movie, he does this thing where It's jaw forward, forehead back, and he's getting the intense eyes. And it's like, okay, this might not be what somebody would do in real life to like, let's turn it to 10. I really want to show people that I'm listening intently. We get it. We could read your eyes, you know? So there's a couple of like, whoa, ease up there, cowboy moments that I found entertaining.
You know, Rob Reiner was probably going, okay, hang on, Tom, a word real quick. You know, this was written as a play. It was a play. And so a lot of the actors would have to play for the cheap seats. And so they've got to see that. This camera's about 12 inches from your face.
Now, your face is going to be 8 feet tall in the theater. So
we're going to get it. It's going to come across.
Yeah, yeah.
Jack Nicholson, meanwhile, I mean, he somehow it works for him. This is also heightened Jack Nicholson, but he's got a range in this and he's chewing up the scenery for sure. But when it's time to do what he needs to do, he does it well. He does
they
it really
put
well.
Great lines in his mouth just for that point. Yes.
Oh, because you want him in the movie, but you can't stand him. But he's also a great character.
Of course.
He is the morally complex center of the whole movie.
It reminds me of like, do you remember Silence of the Lambs? The whole deal was there's this magnetic bad guy and we can't put him on the screen too much.
We a have goes to a be long
looking
way.
Forward to the next time. And when he's on camera, like, well, what's he going to say? It was just like that, where whenever he left a scene with Jack Nicholson, you're like, Could we have a little more of the bad guy? We'd like to hear him talk a little bit more.
Magnetic bad guy.
Fascinating character. Anyways.
That's him in Batman. That's him playing the Joker. And that's, you know, Hans Gruber in Die Hard.
Yes.
The magnetic bad guy. You don't overuse him just enough. And he's the, that character is always the Tony Sacheres of the meal. You're like, yeah, a little bit of hot spice.
Put a little spice in there. Okay, moving on.
I think the other thing that gets overlooked that we as most viewers just kind of take for granted is when a movie is edited tightly, and this is a tight movie. They say that when you write a movie and then when you edit the movie, you want a scene to start as late as possible and end as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't want it too cut, too close to the bone, but you don't want a lot of fat. This movie does not feel like it has any fat in it. It just keeps moving. And the way you know it doesn't have fat in it is that if you had to watch it on cable and as it's unspooling, that's your verb, as it's unspooling, when it cuts to commercial, you're still like, I'm in. I'll watch these dumb AT&T ads because I'm still in. It just keeps the momentum going. Movies that run out of momentum at some point, you're more likely to go, let's see what else is on. This keeps your attention because the editing and the pacing is right on point.
Yes. All right. Let's talk about the messaging of A Few Good Men. As is common with the kinds of things that Aaron Sorkin seems to want to talk about, he is somebody who definitely always has an ethical message to his movies. That's the kind of thing he's interested in. There's complexity in this movie. And I think that a mature viewer is very interested in the kinds of questions that are asked. There's not always pat answers, although I think there's some satisfaction in the way the movie concludes. Many characters in this movie make moves that are politically advantageous while ignoring the moral implications because they want to do the thing that will get the job done, as if might makes right, but the ends justify the means. That's what I'm looking for.
Expediency.
Yeah, that's right. So hopefully a viewer would see what a wicked web those actions can tie. And while there aren't a lot of overt messages, there's a lot of good questions asked. And I can see a couple of messages that are implied just in the way that it's set up. The first is, this sounds, it's crazy as I'm thinking about this film, it's crazy for me to even have to make this comment anymore, but it's true. Here's an implied value of this movie, justice. So this is an old-fashioned movie that believes that bad guys are wrong even when they feel that their actions are justified. And we recently reviewed the movie Wicked, which said that your actions are good if the motives behind them are justified. This movie says the opposite. Even if your motives are justified, the way that you execute something is questionable. We can question the outcome based on the way you did something. Even if the motive, does that make sense?
Yes. I think that though is an appreciation of the law and how law helps set that up.
You're right. So this movie insinuates that people who do things like this should be found out and they should be removed from places of authority. So that's just kind of an interesting worldview that we don't really wrestle with those kinds of questions anymore. Maybe that happens in some films. It's just not a common it's not a common theme. Another point that this film makes is that we it's just an interesting thing. So Tom Cruise is a guy who's a smart aleck. He's born on third base. He wants to ease into a high paying law post. And Demi Moore, who's Joanne Galloway, she keeps preaching to Tom Cruise's character, Daniel Caffey. I just think that's a good character name. And what she's saying is that we owe it to one another. And she keeps saying, you owe it to yourself to use your talents to the maximum capacity in the service of others. And that's basically, she keeps beating him over the head with, you're just trying to slide by till you get a nice paying law post. But you know, there's more that's happening here and you owe it to yourself to give your best. He learns that he has to get some skin in the game and actually care to end up with this value that I've already mentioned, justice, not just a slap on the wrist for evildoers. I can get behind those messages. They square with a Christian worldview. But there are also, as I said, several morally ambiguous questions raised. And I think that those are worth consideration and discussion. There's questions about how much power do people in authority get to wield? What is truth? Who gets to say what the truth is? Somebody has this point of view. Somebody has another point of view. Well, what's the truth at the bottom of I like chewing on all of those things. Any thoughts on messaging?
I think one of the messages is put in very childlike terms is, but you're not allowed to do that. Like that seems to be what fires up the main characters is that they're looking at Jack Nicholson, who is to some degree the bad guy, and they're just going, but you're not allowed to do that. And he's going, but I should be allowed to do that. And that's the big struggle there. There is a moral plumb line. And yeah, you might think you're allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do this. I think it's interesting also. I think the Demi Moore character, she is, it's interesting. I read an article about this recently that oftentimes in movies, the female character acts as the moral conscience for the main male character. And that's definitely the case here. She doesn't change. This movie could have been written with the Tom Cruise character not changing the whole time. I'm coming in hot. I'm going after this. Look, this guy did wrong. We're going to figure it out. And then, oh, see, I got it all done. But he doesn't. There's actually a character transformation from him from the beginning to the end. And I'm curious, because I think you've seen this more recently than I have, how would you describe that arc? Is he kind of I just care about myself and what I want to accomplish? Is that where he starts his journey?
Yes, he is the classic, forgive me, Jeff, for inserting myself into this movie review. I wanted to get into the top 10% of my class. I graduated with 435 students in my class. I was number 43. So I just thought I could do the least amount of work possible to be in the top 10%. That is this guy's life. We see him constantly. He's got a bat in his hand at all times. What he really cares is the softball league. That's what he really cares about. And he wants to do the minimum amount of work so that he can enjoy his free time and check the boxes. And she challenges him repeatedly on, don't you care? It's the speech that I give my kids about, yeah, you got an A. I get that. But did you learn this stuff? Do you care to learn it? And there is a challenge there, which is a really good challenge for all of us, which is, are you just doing the least amount that you have to do? Or are you giving your heart and soul? So yes, she is the moral conscience. And yes, there is a really satisfying character arc for the Tom Cruise character, who by the end of it, he's laying it all on the line. He's risking challenging those in the highest places of authority. They're saying, you know, you could get kicked out of the whole JAG program by doing this. And he's going like, I'm convinced this is the right thing to do. And of course, his teammates are like, that's our guy. Come on, let's go. Let's go for it. So it's kind of this invigorating story. Yeah.
They say that a good movie is one of the hallmarks of a good movie is that it's the story of a main character and something that happens in their life and nothing is ever the same for them after.
Yeah.
That this is the, a screenwriting guy I like to read says that this has to be the story of the main character, the most important thing that has ever happened in their lives.
Yes.
And so you get the sense that after this movie, Caffey's never going to be the same. He will always look at justice differently. He will always look at his role in society differently. You're will always handle law differently. And as a little nota bene, this is why so many sequels are awful, is because the first movie is this character arc. Yes. The second movie is they're back where they started. And right. We're like, but they learn this lesson. Like, let's build off of that and move on from there. Instead, it's just, well, let's rinse and repeat with the same character lesson.
That's a great observation. Very, very helpful. Yep. Okay. Last thing about A Few Good Men is family fit. So as we're talking about this interesting, intriguing, complex storyline, we've got a good arc, etc. Who's it appropriate to watch? Who could we recommend this movie to?
I think any kid who's into Bluey.
I don't think so, Jeff. And this is where you get into like Christian reviewers going, here's the things that are not to like about the movie. I got
here's all the words they say they shouldn't, and I'm going to repeat them all. Number one.
Let me tell you all the disgusting things that were said. But we have to consider those things because we as reviewers are thinking, what could, if we've got friends who are going, should I show this to my eight-year-old? Let me tell you why I wouldn't do that. Okay, so in A Few Good Men, there's lots of taking the Lord's name in vain, which I've heard is a no-no. There's a handful of F-bombs. There's nothing sexual on the screen, but there's uncomfortably graphic oral sex references in two different scenes. There's not a lot of violence, but there is one scene where we see a man tied up in duct tape, and we learn that he basically drowned in his own blood, which is pleasant. I have my antenna raised whenever there's a Christian on screen, because I'm always like, what are they gonna say? Or God is referred to. Well, what's going on here? In this case, it's a bad guy. It's Kiefer Sutherland, TV's Jack Bauer, who I met on a plane one time. And he is an immoral Bible thumper. So he's like the worst kind of, like, loves violence, basically, and uses the Bible to beat
Christian cliche.
Yes, it's yuck. I have to throw in that the very thing that I like, which is that complex plot, would make it a no-go for all but the most mature teens. I mean, even if you had a really astute, mature in their faith 15-year-old, I don't think they're going to make it through this plot. Because as I said, there's a lot of talking about plot and complexity. Wait, that guy was Lieutenant Junior Commander. Ugh, I don't think they would sit through that. A Few Good Men, I said, it was an adapted from a Broadway play. So there's just a lot of talking about things. And, you know, if you like crossword puzzles or you like solving problems, then you think, oh, this is kind of fun. And that's not the case if your target audience really loves watching Spider-Man swoosh through the air. So I'm saying that this is an 18 plus movie and that you should go in with moral armor on. So that's what I think about the family fit. Any other thoughts on family fit?
Yeah, I think maybe it's worth almost doing a whole episode on this, but it makes me think of, well, it's rated R. And a few things about the MPA rating system. The rating system runs from G to PG to PG-13 to R to NC-17. And those ratings are actually, they're genuinely helpful, I think, when it comes to content, when it comes to what's going to be in a movie. For the most part, G means there's not going to be any sort of cursing, sex, violence. PG, maybe a little Star Wars kind of violence, and maybe a couple of words you might hear on broadcast television. PG-13, to get real specific, means there's one F word and probably a smattering of language and probably some violence and a little bit of sexual, at least innuendo, and possibly like brief nudity. R, you're going to get everything in there. And NC-17.
Oh, brother. Gosh,
you're going way, way high. Now, that's helpful only in terms of language, violence and sex. That's right. All it's useful for.
Right.
One of the things I think will hit a lot is you can see a G movie with a godless worldview.
True.
And you can see an R movie with a Christian worldview somehow baked in. So you have to take both into consideration. This movie is R because there's a lot of cussing in it and they talk about things that are a little rough.
Yeah.
But overall, we would say the message, there's some good, hearty, moral messages in there. And that's why you got to go, where is my 18-year-old when it comes to some of those content things? Are they able to chew through that and go, okay, I'm not really seeing that. And I'm going towards the message. Or are they like, whoa, hang on. That's where, as a parent, you have to know your child and know what's appropriate for them and for you as well. It doesn't just because, well, I'm over 18. It's an R-rated movie. I guess I should see it because why not? Well, we all want to be really careful what we're putting in front of our eyes and into our ears.
A Few Good Men is a morally complex courtroom drama featuring big stars acting out a well-written screenplay that will keep the attention of adults who enjoy unpacking a riddle. It's not a clean film. There's plenty of profanity to endure and some sexual talk, but it is a well-made, if somewhat dated, film that ponders moral ambiguity while offering the satisfaction of a Hallmark climax and a hero who learns a valuable lesson. We give it 4 out of 5 folded American flags. That's it for now. Join us next time on Rocket Pop Reviews.
Thanks for listening to Rocket Pop Reviews. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends. See you next time for another family-friendly review.